This is a Dreamcast disc and is for use only on a Dreamcast unit. Playing this disc on a hi-fi or other audio equipment can cause serious damage to its speakers.
Dreamcast, up to 6 billion players.
Welcome back to the Stage of History.
Why don't we play together?
Hey, it's time to make some crazy money. Are you ready? Here we go!
Please stop this disc now.
Hello and welcome to episode 64 of the Dreamcast Junkyard Dream Pod, working title, half a Dreamcast. I am joined today, I'm obviously Kev, I am joined by Mike. Hello, Mike.
Hello, Kev.
It's just the two of us today, so hopefully you're not going to get too annoyed by our voices droning on. How are you, Mike? Are you well? It's been a long time since we've spoken or had a podcast for anyone, let alone me and you, isn't it? So
it has been, yeah. It's been a wee, the last one was in October, was it? November last year?
It was, yep. So, I've not been on one since Play Blackpool, so it has
yeah,
been.
Yeah, so we've read it. It's been it's the first one of 2019, and I'm raring to go.
Okay, right, so I'm going to start by addressing even the elephant in the room or the PlayStation in the room, which is that Tom is no longer with us. He has stepped down from the Dreamcast Junkyard to pursue other interests and other things. I'm sure everyone out there would like to join me in wishing him all the best. Anything to add, Mike?
Yeah, I think as people will know Tom's impact on the Dreamcast Junkyard and obviously the Dream Pod for many, many years. We've both met Tom several times. Really nice guy. I think it's a massive loss to the Dreamcast scene. However, we are still here, and he will be remembered for he'll come back eventually. I'm sure one day we'll see Tom back in the building. But for now, it's that time.
Yeah, enjoying a well-earned rest. So with that addressed. Yeah. Yep, I'd like to officially welcome you to the Dexter Fletcher era of the Dreamcast Junkyard. No doubt there's already people changing their iTunes reviews and saying, who let that idiot Kev take over hosting duties for episode 64? Right, so thank you very much. Just a note, Tom has completely left social media, so if you do want to wish him well, good luck to you. We don't have any way of passing on a way of you doing that, but... I'm sure he knows what an instrumental Dreamcast Sega head he's been to a lot of us, me and Mike in particular, and many of you listening. Right, so Mike, what have you been up to?
So I think we talk about Dreamcast games or games in general.
That's good. Let's start with games in general. Scenes as we've
games in general.
I think it's very fitting of our podcast to have missed not only Christmas and New Year, but the busiest games released part of the calendar. Just kick
indeed.
Got back in March. So
I in terms of modern day games, I've been playing Dirt Rally 2 this week. As regular listeners to the podcast will know, myself and Tom were very big fans of rallying games. And this is the latest one. Fantastic game, as always, from Codemasters. Apart from that, not really much on modern gen consoles, really. It's been a bit of a lean time for me. I've been playing a lot more on my Dreamcast, a lot more on stuff I've downloaded on Game Pass on the Xbox One, rather than actually playing any new releases, really.
I'd echo the Game Pass suggestion. Pretty much the only thing I've played in the last few weeks was Crackdown 3. Have you had a go of that at all?
Yeah.
What's your thoughts on that?
I downloaded it. I haven't played it.
Ah, right. I'm a huge fan of that. If you like the first one, I'm going to imagine that, like me, you'll love this one. If you're a fan of Brooklyn Nine-Nine or Terry Crews, the actor, then getting to play as him in the game is quite frankly a joy. So it's something for people to look forward to. And I don't know if you've picked up on any of the news around it. It's done kind of middling to okay to average, but personally, I was totally ready for that type of game where it's not really a true open world game. It's got a much smaller, I know the term they used to use was sandbox, but this generally feels like that. It generally feels fun and you never feel like you're far away from the next part or the next objective or the next map, or if you want to backtrack to go find something else that you can now reach. I know a few people have mentioned this before, but on the show, but I've got a bit jaded with open world games and the size and scale of games in particular at the minute. So possibly that's why we still hang around with the old Sega systems and the Dreamcast.
Yeah, it's true. I'm a massive fan of open world games myself. You know, sort of growing up in the sort of starting era of it on the PC back in late 90s sort of thing, where the game started to really become open world. It was sort of my dream to always play them. But now I've had a chance to play them over many years, and most of my favorite games of all time are open world games. Jaded is definitely the word I'd use. I think that's why Shenmue is such a popular game with some people, because it's open world, but it's a sort of a structured open world, if you know what I mean.
Red Dead Redemption 1
is one of my all-time favourite games, but I just couldn't get into 2 at all, which was a real surprise for me.
Yeah, it's interesting that you say that, because similar, huge fan of the original one. I've not even tried the second one. I've seen someone recently that I'm friends with said that they spent 190 hours before they finally completed it. I've never been more put off by reading someone's like thoughts on a game. I was just like, oh, 190 hours.
Yeah, it's a lot of hours. And then I realised that I'm still playing Football Manager 2009, and I'm currently at 3,960 hours.
Yeah, true.
And then you realise maybe it's not so bad.
Yeah, I did return to Championship Manager 01-02, the free version, a lot over Christmas. Yeah. So maybe I should be judging others for the amount they spend on games.
Every time I come off of Play Football Manager, something happens that makes me want to go back into it again. I was playing, I haven't played it for about like 4 or 5 months, and there's a guy on Twitter, and I don't know his name, I've got to say, but he gets on putting posts about Championship Manager 01-02 and about his sort of going back to the game, and it just made me want to play Football Manager 2009. It's the last Football Manager I actually sort of really got into. So I spent way too much time on that game. I really have.
Yeah. So leaving the kind of jaded modern view that we have of games behind, what have you been on the Dreamcast then?
Oh, well, what haven't I? As I'm prone to do, I like to make lists. And so I decided to make a list of all the games I needed for my Dreamcast collection. Those are those people who know me will know that I'm a bit of a weirdo, and I do collect Dreamcast stuff. And I was planning to make like a 1A4 piece of paper with all the stuff I wanted for Dreamcast. That current list is currently 39 pages long.
Right.
I'm starting to go through that. So in the last couple of weeks, I've been heavily into getting toys based around Dreamcast games.
Ah, now I spotted the Hot Wheels cars on your Twitter post.
Oh, yes.
I'd never seen them before.
Oh, yes. So, well, most of them are actually based on Xbox games, Sega Xbox games. So you've got Super Monkey Ball, you've got House Head 3, you've got Shinobi and stuff. So but there's a Space Channel 5 car. But I've got a Space Channel 5 figure. I've got some Sakura Tyson, Sakura Wars figures, a Soul Calibur figure, House of the Dead 2 figure. And yesterday, I've just managed to get myself a Crazy Taxi car with figures.
Oh, very nice.
So I've become slightly obsessed with that now. And as well as that, I've also picked up several limited edition games, which I need for my collection, which are currently winging their way over from Japan. And in terms of playing on games, because I do that sometimes as well, I have been playing lots of racing games, because I've been eagerly anticipating the release of Dirt Rally 2. And so I've been going back. So V-Rally 2 has been played. I think I've discussed this in the podcast in the past. Fantastic game. Le Mans, which is my all-time favorite Dreamcast game. And some of the slightly worse ones. I did attempt to do Spirit Speed again, but then I realized that I'm not insane.
The breaker of Dreamcasts, as it will now forever be known.
The breaker of Dreamcast. For those who don't know, when myself, Kevin, and Tom were at Play Expo in Blackpool, we decided to put Spirit Speed onto a Dreamcast. The Dreamcast that was next to the Divers Dreamcast, just for the juxtaposition of terrible and brilliant. And that Dreamcast died. The only Dreamcast that died the entire weekend was the Dreamcast that had Spirit of Sweden.
I think that's it says everything you need to know about that game. In terms of myself, I've been playing, you mentioned this, I have been playing House of Dead 2 a little bit recently. I got the Dreamcast light gun, the official one, ages and ages ago, and I've been in the process. I've moved all of my game stuff. Used to be in our loft room upstairs. We've got our little girl in there now, and I've come downstairs, and when I brought it down, I finally got it out. So I've been having a real good blast on that, pun definitely intended, which is obviously a great game. It's got, I'd love to see or have someone tell me what the dialogue is from the original Japanese game, because it is so spectacularly poor. The way that they the characters speak and interact with each other. But I just... I love that game. I love light gun games. It's my biggest or my saddest regret with the way that modern gaming has developed. We've kind of left that genre behind. I always hope that with the motion control stuff that you get, particularly on Switch, that someone would kind of do something or revive something other than there's been a few of the Deer Hunter shooty style games, but. I'm sure as a vegan, you probably echo this. I just have no desire to shoot at virtual deer.
No, I don't get it. It's not really.
Sorry to any of our American listeners who may be big on real hunting, but it's just a bizarre concept and pastime to me. And I say that as I'm sat in a room now surrounded by hundreds of old games. I just don't get that as a pastime. So that's been really good.
I think the last great light gun shooter probably would be Overkill, House of Overkill on the Wii, which was fantastic.
I don't think I played that.
If you've got any way of playing Wii games, trust me. Or I think it's on the PS4 or PS3. I think it is.
Right.
You need to get it. House of Overkill is just. If any ever a game has been titled correctly, House of Overkill is that title. It is Overkill. It's every single other word is a swear word. It's done deliberately as a really bad B movie, but it comes across absolutely fantastic. And I think the Wii had so much potential for sort of those kind of games.
Yeah.
And it didn't really do it. Maybe the user base wasn't really there for sort of those kind of games, but it was a great game.
Yeah, a sweary light gun games is not the audience people think of when they think of the Wii now, is it? So, yeah, I'm not surprised. No. Just another game. I don't know if you will have played this, but I just want to mention this and also a little bit of an apology with this, and that is Seven Mansions. Have you played this, Mike?
I have.
You have, yeah. I have completely blanked on their names, but the great guys that have done the translation of this, it came out in, I think, end of October. And between myself, Mike, Tom, and a few others, so many staff writers or members have taken up the mantle of putting out some information about this game, and we've still not done it. And so I'm really sorry to those guys, because they've obviously got a lot of work into this. What did you think of this?
Good. Well, I've played the Japanese version. I haven't played the translation. So which is called, right, look on my list now, Nanatsu no Hakan, was it?
Yes, that's seems vaguely right from what I remember looking at the time.
From what I attempted to play, and bear in mind I played all these games like through using Google Translate.
Yeah.
Because my Japanese is zero. It was an interesting title, because it was a game I didn't expect to be a light gun shooter. I was talking about light gun shooters, a survival horror game. I thought it was going to be a visual novel.
Yeah, because it's very colourful to look at, isn't it? Like the box art and anything to do with it. Yeah.
But no, so from what I remember, it's a decent game. Pretty hard to grasp without having the language, unfortunately. But that's what a translation's there for.
I've just before we move on, it's Arcane Aria and Mr. Nobody are the two guys behind that. So I've got a load of information from them of some amazing stuff that we will get up on the site. A bit like you, I'm not really a survival horror fan, but I really liked, I've maybe played 2 or 3 hours of that, which doesn't sound like a lot, but it's that probably accounts for maybe 20% of the gaming I've done this year so far due to being busy with work. And I did really like it. It's speaking to a few other people about it. I've described it as oddly Japanese in the way that it looks and the way that the aliens are and the way that the character is like addressed. The fact that you're, from what I picked up, it's a sequel to a Saturn game, and they inexplicably return to the same like situation as the first one for no real reason. That might not be completely accurate, but that's what my research has kind of shown. It's really, I found it fascinating that like when I started playing it and I looked on YouTube, especially back in 2018, there's just so little information about it. I got to a point where I was stuck for a good solid 25-30 minutes, and I tried to find like a guide. I just couldn't find any information. It was very reminiscent of when you were stuck on like a Mega Drive game, and you just, unless you knew someone specifically that could be, oh yeah, you have to go and get the key and jump up on the ledge, or could tell you what to do because they'd done it. I was just, I literally had to work it out, because the person whose video I was watching was playing it in Japanese like you had done. And so they couldn't work out what to do. But luckily, thanks to the translation, I realized I'd missed something, found the switch, turned that on, managed to get a door open and progressed from there. But yeah, if you're a survival horror fan, I'd recommend, I'll put a link up in the notes, and we'll put a link when we put this out so people can get hold of that. And then I do promise the guys I will finish that article at some stage once I've played a bit more of the game. So, right. So there we are, caught up with what we've been doing. We're going to move on to some Dreamcast news now, which is very nice to have. So the first bit of news is the Retro Fighters DC controller that was recently successfully kickstarted. I believe that's the correct terminology to use for that. Mike,
it is.
Have you seen this and have you backed it?
I have seen it. I haven't backed it for reasons I'm sure we'll get into in a second.
I have backed this. I'm it's not something that I would normally back. Quite a lot of people do like the Dreamcast pad. I am one of them. Where would you stand with your love-hate relationship with it?
I love the Dreamcast, and I've played every single Dreamcast game, and I hate the controller.
Right, okay. So there we are. We're at each end of the spectrum there. For me, retro game or gaming, just gaming or retro gaming in particular, the nostalgia factor is a huge part of it. So playing stuff in as original a format as possible is important to me. But I was just, I was really taken by the fact that they've put so much work into this pad that they've completely had to build. And we put this up in the article we put up, and it's been reported elsewhere. They had to reverse engineer the VMU slot because it's so unique, and they couldn't find any parts for this anywhere. So I don't know, just because of my interest on being on the Dreamcast Junkyard, being a fan, I was just interested in trying someone's new modern 2019 take on the pad. Is there a reason why you've not gone for it yet?
I think even though I don't like the pad, I think it's one of those kind of things where I'm so ingrained now with the use of the Dreamcast pad that it just wouldn't feel right for me.
I'm
going to wait for some reviews. I'm going to pick one up at some point, no doubt. But I sort of wanted to make sure that it wasn't going to be a complete waste of money, which is quite funny, seeing as I waste my money all the time. But,
I get that.
I've got other stuff to get, and it's not sort of one of the major things. Interestingly enough, actually, there's another Kickstarter project which I'm going to mention after this. Which is another reason I'm not kickstarting the controller for.
Right, no worries. As we stand, there are 12 days left on the next-gen Dreamcast controller by Retro Fighters, and it's at £74,000. So it was aiming for a goal of just under 10,000 UK pounds. Because someone reported this on our Facebook group, which we'll give a mention at the end if you want to go find that, if you're not part of that. By the time I'd got there, after about 4 hours after this had been posted up or announced. It had already been backed. So for anyone who isn't aware, Retro Fighters have done a successful range of N64 pads, and I believe they've done a NES pad, but I'd have to check that. But they're not a new company, if that makes sense. They're someone who successfully delivered these before. That was part of my reason why I was just like, you know what, I'm gonna give this a try, see what it's like. But probably like a lot of people, I do like that kind of original feel. It will be nice to have a new pad though, because a lot of mine are getting worn and broken. So it is nice to know that technology is being revived for VMU, rumble support, and stuff like that. Take a little detour from our running schedule here then, Mike. Do you want to mention the next Kickstarter project?
Yeah, so it seems to be, if there's any theme for this year coming, it's the fact that we seem to be having quite a few published works. We've just had the Japanese guidebook released a couple of months ago, which is all in Japanese, funnily enough, which is fantastic. And we've also got the collected works book, which was on Kickstarter a couple of years ago now, coming up at some point this year. There's in about a week's time, I think it's the 6th of March, a guy called Andrew Dickinson is going to be launching a Kickstarter called Dreamcast Year One, which is a unofficial story of the Sega Dreamcast launch and first year, including interviews and game retrospectives. As someone who has written some stuff about Dreamcast, let's say, I'm quite excited by these new bits of literature coming out. So 6th of March, that's coming to Kickstarter.
I've spotted that because he's been advertising again in our Facebook group, and I've seen him around on Twitter. I probably will back that. I'm not as big on reading and literature just because I never really get round to it, but I do like the specific focus of that. So I would be interested in that. I'm going to take it that you will be backing that. I'm sure many of you will be backing that as well. If you spot anything else, feel free to hit us up on our Twitter or on our Facebook group, like we mentioned. So it's always great to see that we're in a kind of an era now where those types of projects are more successful than not. Although we will come on to some news later that contradicts that. Are you ready to move on to the Josh Prod releases that are coming up?
Let's do it. Yeah.
Right. So do you want to give us a bit of an introduction about who Josh Prod are for anyone who doesn't know?
So Josh Prod are the French-based publishing company, I suppose you could call, who released, they're on their fourth, three waves of Dreamcast games have come out so far already. And they basically are a mix of indie games ported to Dreamcast. Other games that have been released have re-releases, so some of the other independent games, and also games from the 1990s and before, I think, arcade games. So far, they've released things like Flashback. I've forgotten what other games they released now, bizarrely. 4x4 Jam. They've released Bankbusters. Fate to Black, yeah, The Escaping. They've got a really good core of games. You know, people have complained about Dreamcast independent games being shoot 'em ups for many years. In actual fact, the last several we've had have all been really, really good. And a varied sort of selection. So they've now announced their, I believe it's fourth wave of games, which are five more games coming to Dreamcast in late April, I believe.
And I'm just going to give you the list. It's Captain Tomaday, Finding Teddy, Magic Pockets, FX Unit, Yuki, and ARMS 7. Is that correct, Mike?
It certainly is, yeah, Master 5.
There we are. And just to give them a shout out, I know ARMS 7 is also out on the Switch, just in case you are someone who doesn't want to go the Dreamcast route but might be interested in supporting them. Have you ordered all of these?
I have.
Right, okay. I was trying to phrase that without it sounding rude, but I imagined that you would.
You know, Kev, you've met me, Kev. I'm slightly insane.
Right. We'll start with the ways that we've got them in a list. I'm going to be very honest with our listeners. I've got very little clue about any of these. I have been looking at a few of them, but we're going to start with Captain Tomaday. Can you tell us anything about this? Am I right to begin with? This is where is a Neo Geo CD game, yes?
I believe it's a Visco game. I think it was an arcade game, which I think is an arcade game originally. Visco is other Japanese developers who quite a few of the other games they've released have been Visco games. So Breakers have been Visco. Ganryu, I think, was Visco as well. And I think possibly Bangs and Busters was Visco as well. So it looks as though they've got some kind of deal with them. So I believe it's an arcade game from Visco.
Right, and I've been told it's a kind of side-scrolling game by Philippe, who is the guy who is has a role at Josh Prod, or is Josh Prod in an extent.
Is Josh Prod, yeah.
So I've done him a disservice there.
I've got to be honest with you, I'm not entirely sure what the game is. This is where I come up short on podcasts. I don't read previews.
Right, yeah.
Previews. I think isn't it a vertical shmup?
Oh, is it? Right, I'm way off here. I was going off what a message Philippe told me, which I will try and drag up as we were going. But he has said that he's going to give us.
It's horizontal.
It's horizontal, right? I must be confusing it with something else.
I'm not sure. I'm confusing myself here.
I did. I did announce that we were in the Dexter Fletcher years, so I think we're covered, aren't we? So,
Yeah, this isn't as smooth as it was with Tom, is it?
Tom. He'd be if he's listening to this somewhere, he'll be putting the handbrake on his car and pulling up on the side, or whatever the handbrake equivalent is on a motorbike.
when we do finally get an article up on the Junkyard about these games,
we will know what they are. We'll hopefully have played them by then. Yeah.
I think it's a vertical shmup.
Right, okay. So after talking about how they were moving away from shmups, we've now just moved straight on to one. I'm not really a shmup fan. I know we've got a huge audience out there that is, but...
I love shmups. I think the problem with shmups on Dreamcast is the fact that there's such a high quality that any independent shmup has to be of a really good class to be able to get mentioned. Stormwind has set the bar at a very high level.
Yes, yeah. So it's if you are an independent developer out there, you might want to have a look at a football game, because the bar for that is very low.
Very low.
So yeah. That'd be the one to attack. Right, yeah. I've got my message from Josh Prod. So I've got some information that can put on a few of the games now. So the second game, Finding Teddy. This is the one I'm most interested in.
Yeah.
So
it's really interesting looking. I haven't played it, but I know it's on Steam. It's got some really interesting reviews. It's got a sort of a Tim Burton-esque feel to it, which my wife loves.
Yeah, and it's kind of point and click-esque, isn't it? Kind of adventure style. It's interesting that you said it was on Steam, because it looks like the sort of game, mainly game on Switch at the minute, or Xbox Games Pass. But if I was flicking through and I saw a game with this style, I'd probably instantly give it a download. Yeah, it does look... I've mentioned this before on here, but one, I'm not like Mike in the sense that I'm not as interested in the games that come out. I've linked to kind of my reasons with the pad. I like it for the kind of nostalgia feel, and a lot of the games are very different, but I would be really keen to give this a go just because it's so different to anything that was out. I was trying to have a look earlier about, were there any point and click games that came out at all? Certainly not in the PAL territory that I could think of.
Stupid Invaders.
Right. There we are. So I've never played that. I wasn't sure if Florigan Brothers was one, because I have that.
Florigan, but that's, it is. It's a weird game, Flying Brothers, because you think it's going to be a point-and-click adventure, but actually, it's not. It's a sort of it's a weird sort of third-person action adventure sort of puzzle mix-up.
Right. So I've got that. I've never given it a go. It's still brand new and sealed from when I got it last year.
Good game.
I can't remember the name of the guy, but there's a very famous voice actor on that, which is what drew me towards it. Despite its middling to poor reviews. So the next game, Magic Pockets. Can you give us any information about this?
So Magic Pockets is, I this, I really should do my research before I come on the podcast.
Now, it's a Bitmap Brothers game, isn't it?
It is indeed, and I love Bitmap Brothers, so which just makes me even more ridiculous. I don't know what it is.
Well, you say that. In Mike's credit, I initially thought this was a snooker game when I first saw it.
So did I.
Because I'm convinced there was an Amstrad or a Spectrum game that was called Magic Pockets. But it's a Bitmap Brothers game. I know they've got like a huge following, but I'd never heard of this. But it's not something that I'd be that interested in playing on the Dreamcast, if I'm honest. But I would be interested in seeing how it runs and what people's thoughts are on it, and if it's
interesting enough. And this is my knowledge from the internet that I've picked up. It actually was used in a TV series on ITV called Motormouth. I'm not sure if any of our listeners have ever remember a late 80s, early 90s TV series called Motormouth. Apparently, they used to play this game in between segments.
Right.
I've never seen the program, so I don't know. But it's a relatively popular and relatively well-known game. I think for some reason in my head, the game is sort of a... I think I've got it mixed up with Marco's Magic Football.
Right, yeah. Remember from the Mega Drive.
Well.
Mega Drive and Amiga, is that
right? Mega Drive and Amiga.
Yeah.
So I think for some reason in my head it's like that. But I think it's a sort of a platformer, sort of cutesy, mascot-orientated platformer, which, to be honest with you, you haven't got much of on the Dreamcast, so...
No, that's true. It's got the... From what I remember, it's got the most 90s box art...
Yes.
...imaginable. So hopefully they replicate that and bring it across. Leaving Magic Pockets, not a snooker game, is the big takeaway there. FX Unit Yuki. This is the one that I had a bit of a conversation with Philippe about. He's described this as having sort of like light Metroid, Castlevania-like stages. That's like pretty much the only thing I can put. FX Unit is a simple platform with some shooting stages and some Castlevania-like stages. So it sounds like a bit of a cross or a bit of a mix.
So FX Unit Yuki is probably going to be more well-known to the people on the podcast as Henshin Engine, it's a renamed version of that. Came out on the PC Engine, I believe, last year. It had a sort of a Metroidvania sort of feel, I suppose, to it. And I think it had some shooter segments in it as well. Don't quote me on that. Another interesting little game, I think, really for Dreamcast. Good to see a game, you know, actually come out. I know there was some doubt about it in the past, so great to see it come out.
Yeah, I was going to say, at the risk of bringing this up, I was surprised to hear that that was the Henshin Engine and they've changed their name. And then I remember some of the issues that we had with that on the group. So I'm not so surprised that they've changed the name. But we're
not expecting review copies, put it that way.
Oh, yeah. It's fantastic to see that it has made it to market. And then ARM 7 was the one that I mentioned also. It's got a eShop. I feel like that's the name, isn't it? eShop release. So this is a kind of... I'm going to try and take the lead on this, Mike. Is it a side-scrolling robot mech shooter, from what I've seen of it as trailer running?
R-type shooter, I think, isn't it?
So there we are. That is the five games. Moving on to a game that we won't be getting, though. If you've got a hat on, feel free to take it and clutch it to your chest now as a mark of respect. I know you had this backed, I believe, Mike, because you've mentioned it before. Yep. It's Saber Riders, which rides no more. It's the very clever play on words that I've put in our schedule. when did you find out that this was cancelled, Mike?
So, interestingly enough, I only found out on a post from Dreamcast Today on Facebook, another Facebook group on Facebook, they posted out saying that they had an email. My email had actually gone to my junk folder. The email came from Rush On Games, who released all of the Josh Pod games as well. It actually gone to my junk folder, which had basically said that the game had been delayed. They had no communication with the developers, and therefore they were offering either a refund or an exchange for one of the new releases.
Particularly sad to see this because I have since hearing guys talking about it on the show or seeing the odd post about it, it did look great. And it's based on the real kind of cartoon that I had no real like recollection of, but it did have a kind of glorious look to it. So it is a shame that they've not been able to fulfill on this. Was this a Kickstarter or a GoFundMe or a crowdfunded or anything, Cor?
I think it was a Kickstarter. Kickstarter.
So it's a potential shame that obviously people like Mike who've bought this from a store have got that opportunity to move their funds across. But I'm going to imagine that anyone who's backed this on a Kickstarter is just not getting their money back. I don't want to just throw assumptions out there, but it's one of the downsides of that method of funding. Mm. And when you're working with a developer where it's, I'm not going to say part-time because I know they've put a tremendous amount of work into that, but it's not their full-time role. So,
yeah, I know some people aren't big fans of Kickstarter. I know Ross, one of the members of Junkyard, is a particular opponent of some of the things that Kickstarter do. I think it's great that we can get all these games out and get near the controller and the book. It's great that we have all of this on Kickstarter, but I think there's always a danger where, you know, a lot of these guys haven't done games before.
Yes.
And I think that maybe they're biting off more they can chew. And I think that unfortunately, if you're going to back things on Kickstarter, I know people who back things on Kickstarter and then they'd start these massive campaigns to sort of try and get the money back. End of the day, if you're going to back something on Kickstarter, be prepared to lose the money. You're not doing it because you want to, you know, you are potentially going to lose your money. You're an investor. You're not a consumer at that point. You're an investor in the product. So I think that's why I only back products myself that I really, really do want. And some have worked. You know, Alice Dreams, is it?
Alice Tournament?
That's the one, yeah. Alice Dreams Tournament. I've completely forgotten the name of the game, which is not a great example of me liking the game, is it? But I backed that game, absolutely fantastic. And I've backed some of the collected works on there, and I've backed Shenmue 3. So there are some things which are great, but I think there's always going to be that risk. And I think with Saber Rider, there's been a few issues over the last couple of years. There's been a couple of differences of opinion between the people who are making the game. And I think there's unfortunately always going to be that element. We're kind of lucky with the Dreamcast that most games that get announced, we seem to get eventually. But there's always going to be a couple.
Yeah, so sad news, as we said. So we're going to move on to the special feature of the pod. People may have spotted this was sent out on Twitter that we were doing this. So we've got a few tweets that we can give a shout out as we're going along. So what we've done, myself, Mike, and a few of the other guys, we have definitively ranked, I'm going to say, this is legally binding, the best sports games that appeared on the Dreamcast. Now, we did mention sports games very briefly, a bit of a spoiler when we mentioned the terrible football games. How this vote worked, everyone picked 5 and they were ranked in order of like the top ranking one would receive 5 points towards the final vote, 4 votes, 3 votes, 2 votes, 1 vote, and so on. And then they've been put in order, and we're gonna go through the list, give you some feedback, talk about the games, our memories of them, give you some of the tweets that we've received about them. And like I said, we're going to definitively give you the best sports game on the Dreamcast. Just going to give out some of the rules that we had. There's no motorsport in here. We can cover that as its own genre. There's plenty of good racing games. We've had the racing special before. And also there is no wrestling games on here. Because wrestling is not a sport. Mike, agree or disagree?
I'm going to sit back whilst you get hate mail, so yeah. I'm not going to give.
Hey, I love wrestling. I have a huge 90s WWF fan and early 2000 WCW, but it's not a sport. It's not going on my vote list because it's not a sport. Look at that. I've already gone power mad. I've hosted one episode. So I would like to say that I was very much alone in that. It did cause contention with virtually everyone else who tried to vote.
Yeah.
I've held my role on the top turnbuckle. I'm not let them be included. Not that I don't think there's any good ones, so I don't know why anyone would want to include them. But yeah, well, that's a conversation for another day. Right, so we have got 12 games in total on our list. That is, that's the first incorrect thing I've said. We've got 11 games. I even explained to Mike a little bit of formatting with my list, just so he'd know that there's going to be something that we can discuss about at the end. And then I've been caught out by it myself. So maybe I should have explained it. Or maybe I should have listened more carefully while I was explaining it to Mike.
Myself.
Yeah. So, right. So the first game coming in on the list is Maximum Pool. He's in the final slot, slot 11, which is Maximum Pool. Then, Mike, I'm going to kick it over to you.
Yeah.
Can you tell me anything about this?
Yeah, so I'm assuming the Maximum Pool's got on this list because it's an online playable game. I believe online on via DreamPie is quite a good game. I haven't played it online. As a single-player experience, it's terrible. I'm not entirely sure what to say more than that, really. It's probably better slightly than Jimmy White's Whirlwind Snooker on the... It's not called Jimmy White's Whirlwind Snooker, is it?
No, I should say. It's Jimmy White's 2, isn't it? I'm sure there's a 2 in that somewhere.
Yes, I think so.
But Jimmy White's does have darts in it as well, doesn't it? So
and Drop Zone.
I can feel an article coming on. Is Maximum Pool better than Jimmy White? I downloaded a CDI version of that and could not get it to work, which I'm not going to spend any more time trying to get to work after your review.
It's a top-down pool game, so it's not a 3D. It's not a 3D pool game.
Right, which
so it feels a little bit to me like one of those games you sort of had in the early days of online, where you sort of would play pool against someone on some slightly dodgy free game site.
Yeah, and it'd be intriguing and interesting because you'd never done that sort of thing before.
Exactly.
As Mike said, this is still playable online. So if you are one of the 6 people that still play it online, we would like to apologise for. Insulting your pastime.
Right.
I'm not off to a good start here because this is another game I've never played. I'm not going to lie. I'd never heard of this. Cosmic Smash.
Yep.
Have you played this?
Of course I've played Cosmic Smash, yeah. One of my favourite games of all time. Absolutely brilliant game. Imagine Squash mixed with Rez. That is pretty much Cosmic Smash. It's got a really... calling it a sports game is a little bit cheeky of us, because it's not really a sports game.
No.
It's an arcade, very, very stylized game, but it plays fantastically. It's basically, you have different rooms. You've basically got to get the ball back after loads of obstacles, destroy the obstacles, and then move on to the next room. It's a bit weird. It's quite minimalistic in its look, but it's a fantastic game. And unfortunately, for those who want to get the original games, also quite an expensive one.
Right. Okay. So I was not aware of that. I did do a bit of research on this. It does, as you say, it looks fantastic. It looked more like a kind of, I've blanked on the name. Is it like Grid Runner? It's that kind of pseudo 2D/3D view where it's like you're looking into the screen. I don't feel like I've explained that very well, but I'm sure if people who are like me who are a bit ignorant of it go and have a look.
Reminds me of a game I played on the Spectrum many, many years ago. And I can't remember for life the name of the game, but it was Rune something. And basically you had 2 paddles, and it was a 2-player game. And each screen was a sort of a 3D view, and you'd basically move the paddle around the screen and hit it back. And it looks a little bit like that. So it's quite wireframe and quite minimalistic and sort of look. But don't let that put you off. The game plays just superbly, and it's got this amazing, like I said, Rez style to it. That sort of really... I suppose, futuristic look to it.
I just like to give a little shout out here to Otish and Kim Brownbill on Twitter, who both picked that. I knew there was some other fans of that out there. Although Kim does point out, like you, it's maybe too much of a stretch, but
yeah,
there are clearly fans of that out there. So moving on to the next one, World Series Baseball. Another one that is playable online. Is it? Has that gone live yet? I believe it has, hasn't it?
Yeah, I think 2K1 is on is online. Yeah.
So yeah, I've lumped these kind of in together. This is something I was hoping. There was quite a few. I know Ross had this very high on his list, as we can, as Mike can see now, because he can see my notes. I have got this. I've bought it since we started planning this. I've still not got around to playing it. I'm not the biggest baseball fan. How much time have you put into this, Mike?
Lots of time. So there's two games. I think it's very important. There's two different games we're talking about here. There's 2K1, there's 2K2. 2K1 is awful.
Right.
It's awful. I think it's automatic fielding. It doesn't look right. It just doesn't feel like a good game. 2K2 is a far better game. It's a really good, solid sports game on Dreamcast. But yeah, I'm hoping that, I think Ross did rate it highly. I think he meant 2K2. I'm going to assume he's got good taste, Ross.
So he might. I know we do tend to have slightly more of a UK audience, but we do have American followers and American posters. And we didn't really have anyone highlight these in the tweet that we put out.
They're not regarded that highly as games. They tend to be. I think maybe because of the fact that we had such a good lineup of games from the other American sports.
Yeah.
So I think baseball was a little bit down in terms of compared to the visual concepts of the titles.
Right. And then we're moving on to number 8 on the list, NBA Showtime. Mike, I'm going to kick straight to you. Fan of this?
Yes.
I'm going to jump in here. This is on here. This is as high as it is, purely because of my love of it. I'm the only person who voted for this, but I've got it quite highly in my list. I'm a huge fan of this. It's a midway game, but it's effectively NBA. Well, it's not effectively. It is NBA Jam.
It is.
So this is one of my uni games. I've spoke before about the Dreamcast came along during my uni time. So I still had loads of free time to game, but I didn't live at home, so I wasn't being badgered about the fact that I'd been in my room for 12 hours straight, not eating or showering or doing any of the stuff that seems to be a problem for people who are currently addicted to a game like Fortnite. But this was a great game. I love the fact that it gave your players stats on the VMU. Which player you had, it would show that up. And also the fact you could save your profile, and then it would show you like the average points that you'd get, average rebounds, that type of stat-heavy thing, how many trivia questions you'd answered that used to come up. Pretty much all of my basketball knowledge comes from those trivia questions that are on that game. There's another game that is very similar that we will mention when we get round to that. Spent much time with this?
I have, yeah. So, bizarrely enough, it's one of the... I've spoken on the podcast before about the fact that my now wife, when I first met her, she had a Dreamcast. When she was obviously a bit younger than I am. That sounds bad, doesn't it?
It does sound a bit bad, yeah.
She's in her 30s. I'm not like, I'm not...
Yeah, you did prefix that with that she owned a Dreamcast, so that does put a certain age on it.
Yeah, yeah. So she had a Dreamcast, and she had a few games. They're mainly sort of kids' games. And one of the games she had was NBA Showtime, NBA versus NBC, or NBA on NBC. And I never played it when I had a Dreamcast myself. So it was one of the first games I sort of came back to when I went back to the Dreamcast. And it's just a really good, fun game. I'm actually a bigger fan of the semi-sequel on the Dreamcast.
Which?
NBA...
I've gone blank on that. It's got Shaquille O'Neal on the front, hasn't it? NBA Hoops. Yeah.
It's 3-on-3.
Yes, I've got that, but I bought a copy of that, but the disc doesn't work. So I don't know if that means I own it or not, but I at least have the case and the manual. I have a disc.
It's a good point, actually. You've raised the question, which we have to discuss on our future podcast. If you buy a game and the game's broken, do you own the game? That's an interesting point.
No, yeah. So there we are. Next topic coming up. So huge fan of this. It's got, I always forget his name, but the voiceover artist who is the best voiceover hype man in video games history, as far as I'm concerned. So we're going to move on to game seven. I know that you're going to have feelings and thoughts on this, because you, like me, you are a track and field head. This is Virtua Athlete. I hope I've pronounced that. I'm never quite sure how you to pronounce the first part of them, which is, to all extensive purposes, it is, I've forgotten what it's called now. What's the UK version?
Decathlete Kings.
There we are. Yeah, I was going to call it Decathlete, but I know that's not right. It's the Decathlete Athlete Kings sequel almost, but it's got a lot of the kind of personality of that game removed. Am I right in thinking you don't like this?
You'd be right in saying that, yes.
Right, yeah. Yes, because you wrongly think that Sydney 2000 is a good game, don't you?
No, I rightly think.
So, Virtual Athlete, I kind of like, I didn't play it at the time. If you were one of the four people who watched this, my kind of rise onto the Dreamcast Junkyard was because I made an overly long, overly in-depth video on the track and the Dreamcast button mashing games, which is Virtual Athlete, is of course part of. It's about 29 minutes long, if I remember. It's a few years ago now. I do like this. I didn't vote for this, but I do like this. It's another game that I wished I'd got into at the time, because it's got the online leaderboards and rankings. I would have been so up for that.
I think for me, it's the game. It has some really good ideas. So when you create a character, you can basically select different pastimes for the character, different interests. And apparently that affects the stats of the character, which is a really, really cool concept, but it doesn't seem to actually work. Or make any difference in the game whatsoever.
You can pick up to three, and it's got it's supposed to have that kind of crossover feel. I do like the fact that, and I did mention this in my crazy niche video, that you could save your character, and then if I was to save my character on like one VMU and I was playing on another VMU, I can load up and race against the kind of ghost times of that person. So if this had been around when I mentioned my uni days before, we would have loved that. It would have been great to have been able to load up other people's characters and race against them when you were potentially the only person around, because it is a very soulless endeavor playing track and field by yourself, isn't it?
Yeah.
So
I think the biggest reason I don't like Virtua Athlete is because of the fact it's not the sequel to Winter Heat. And I think Winter Heat is my favorite Saturn game, and I'm still annoyed that we never got a sequel on Dreamcast, because that would have been a game I still play every day now if I could.
There's only seven events, isn't there? Six events. I remember it's got the least events of any of the games. I could understand paying £40 for this in the Dreamcast days. You probably would have been angry. I got my copy for about £2 or £3, which is probably why I've got very different thoughts and feelings on it to other people. So we're going to move on to slot six now. So we're getting towards the top five. Sports Jam. Another one, just checking our tweets here, but another one that got mentioned a few times. Before we started recording, I said to Mike that I played this for the first time in response to it being on this list. It has got what I would consider the best menu music of any video game of all time. That kind of crazy funk jazz music that's got like a saxophone blaring away over it. And it's insanely bassy as well. Other than the great music, what's your thoughts on this?
So I know that we've talked about Sports Jam in the past. I know Tom wrote an article many years ago about the slightly crazed announcer in the game.
Yes.
But the actual game itself, as someone, like I said, I love all the sort of multi-sport games. So I love anything from summer games, winter sports, right up to winter heat and things like that. Sports Jam is the best type of game like that we've got on the Dreamcast. It's got a mix of so many different sports. And it looks great. And it also, some of them are really basic. You know, the things like the hockey one where basically it's Pong, basically. But fully 3D. We've got things like American football. There's one where you just basically tap the button. It's the 100-meter type event. You've got other ones where you've got the golf games on there. The graphics are amazing.
It does look great, especially through the VGA lead. I was blown away when I put it on for the first time the other day.
It's a really good. It's a really good, fun game. It doesn't overlast. It's overstay its welcome. It's quite a simple game. But I really like Sports Jam.
Yeah, this is a game that is currently still in my Dreamcast and will play over this weekend. I have got some footage I need to put out of the first time I put it on when I thought I was a bit Billy Big Bollocks. I was like, I'm not gonna read anything about how the game plays because I've been told it's a kind of track and field style mashup, and I'm just gonna smash this. I'm gonna kill it because I'm great at these games. And I straight in with the snowboarding. No idea what I was doing. I couldn't figure out any of the buttons other than jump. And I got stuck behind a rock for 60 seconds. And I was just like, maybe I should stop this recording and actually have a read of the manual. And I did that, sorted out the snowboarding. And then when it goes down, it flies you off onto like a speed paraglider, doesn't it? And I was just like, this game is insane. I can't believe I've never even played it.
That's not Sports Jam.
Oh, you were kidding me. What am I thinking?
Extreme Sports.
That is Extreme Sports. I played the wrong game.
What a brilliant...
I was like, well, this game, it's got mountain biking, it's snowboarding, it's got Mike's talking about American football. I'm going to kill James. Yeah. he voted for this game. And I had a conversation with him about it on Facebook, about how much I was enjoying it. And at no time was he like, what snowboarding? What are you talking about, Kev?
Sega Extreme Sports, yeah. So it's and funny enough, it's actually one of my favorite games as well. We didn't, for some reason, that hasn't. Maybe it is on the list. Maybe it is.
But it's a really great game. I don't think it is. Moving on.
It's your first time hosting. Don't worry. Don't worry. You'll be forgotten.
Yep, I'll edit that bit out. So Sports Jam. Nothing to say about that. Don't even know what game it is. Apparently, good thing it wasn't in the top five. What is in the top five though? Is Virtual Striker. Oh, Mike. I can't believe that you've introduced the greatest football game on the Dreamcast in such a downtrodden manner, undeserving of its...
It is the greatest football game on the Dreamcast. I'm going to 100% agree with you there. It's still terrible.
It is not terrible.
I'm being deliberately facetious. I actually don't mind Virtual Striker. In fact, I the only game I played at Play Expo last year, where I actually played Virtual Striker 2 Cabinet for about an hour and a half. Whilst everyone else was having a party, I was playing Virtual Striker 2. It's a good game. It's actually quite a decent game. Is it a great game? It's got possibly the steepest learning curve of any game I've ever played.
Yes.
In fact, where you first play it and you genuinely think that the game is playing itself.
Yes,
and any set.
Yep, definitely. And it's got, my mate always used to refer to the tackling because it makes a noise that sounds like a snake. It does that kind of shk, shk every time anyone hits the slide button, which is what I've never been able to break away from, that kind of imagery. It's got some tremendous features to it, though. The goal ranking and the goal music and the announcer, saving goal of the day, that type of stuff. It is... Like, there's 30 teams, or 32 teams on it. There's no difference between any of them. There appears to be no stats. Every player is the same speed. Some players have that kind of late 90s thing of they'll have a slightly different haircut. And that's like the only identifying feature. I'm a bit of a footy head or a soccer head. Some of the teams play formations that the countries they're representing would never play or would never have played at the time. So very little research actually seems to have gone into it. But I bloody love this game. We used to play this every Thursday at mine when I was in sixth form, in what we used to call the Dreamcast League. So it's probably, I appreciate, it's a huge nostalgia pick for me. And it is not a fluid game of football. It's like,
no,
it's a very Stoke-like affair. But I do like it. Awful goalkeeping. But
I think the thing is that on the Dreamcast we were, you know, I'm going to take this opportunity to moan about this again, that we were not blessed with the greatest football games. We were given some pretty terrible games. I know some people on our Twitter feed and stuff gave some shout-outs to some other Dreamcast games. I think 90 Minutes.
90 Minutes. I was just finding that there. It's Mark gave a shout-out for that, and someone else did. So hello to those people.
He said that they say, you know, I think people said it's so bad it's good. No, it's just bad. There wasn't anything on there. Giant Killers for Manager Games was decent.
Yeah, also another shouted out by Mark and a few others. So yeah.
And the Japanese management games as well, the Let's Play soccer ones, they're actually pretty decent.
How playable are they in terms of playing it without knowing the language? Because I know you've done some studies on that. I know it's a bit off topic, but
it's not easy. It's, you know, I had to basically rely on Google Translate quite a lot, but it's just about doable. If you've played any of those really cheap football games on the PS2 that came out, there was a couple of games, Let's Make a Soccer Team, and there's a couple of other ones which are always in bargain bins in game for years and years. They're basically the same game,
right?
So you sort of can tell your way around it. It's quite in depth. It's a bit more like Ultimate Soccer Manager from the 1990s, on the PC. It's sort of you can do things with the ground, and you can sort of base a team in a new part of Japan, and it's all right. It's not an amazing game, but it's quite good fun. And compared to some of the other football games, like, you know, European Super League and stuff, the playable one.
I always forget what they're called. And unlike Sports Jam, I have played them. I've played an appalling amount of them, considering how bad they are.
So so there's UEFA Dream Soccer. There's UEFA Striker.
League for Striker. That's the one. Yeah.
There's Sega Worldwide Sports, Sega Worldwide Soccer European Edition, and 2000. And we've also got I can't remember what the other one is now. American listeners, 90 Minutes, American listeners will know UEFA Striker as Striker 2000, I believe, which I think was the American release, the only football game released in America.
So we're going to leave Virtual Striker there, brilliant / maligned though it is. I'm going to move on to number four. I know we're both fans of both this sport and these games series in particular, and it's NFL, the 2K series. So I've just put a little note here, particularly the 2K2, which I believe is considered the definitive release of this. I've not really played a lot of this on the Dreamcast, although I will say that ESPN 2K5, as it later became, is probably not only one of my favourite original Xbox games, but one of my favourite sports games of all time. So I'm never surprised to see how well this is, how well it's thought of it is. Mike, over to you.
I think it's just a fantastic series of games. I think compared to what came before it, from EA stable and you know, on the PlayStation 1 and other platforms, I think it's just a massive step up. As you know, we've both got into American football games in the UK probably before we got into the sport on TV. I know I did. So I sort of learnt American football through playing Madden on the Mega Drive. The step up to this is quite amazing. I actually love the sort of offshoot of the NFL 2K series as well, NCAA 2K2, which is the college
version
game. Really, really good game. I don't really understand what college football's about, I've got to be honest with you, but it's a much faster game, and all the different stadiums are really interesting. But the gameplay is just fantastic. I've been going back to Madden in the last couple of years on the modern gen consoles, and it just doesn't. There's nothing interesting for me. I still regard NFL 2K2 as my favourite.
The product, the TV production style of it was what I liked. I just want to read out a tweet here from, I hope I'm pronouncing this right, DJ Tatsujin, I particularly liked this. I always remember seeing NFL 2K the first time. It was on a KB Toys display prior to launch. The TV-style production just grabbed my attention, and I kept watching the demo loop. I probably would have skipped the VC Sports series completely if it weren't for that experience. And then it's just loads of people just commenting, like, how much they played it, how they used to play it with friends, how much they like the other 2K games in particular. So our American audience, we've mentioned this before, in our group, we'll commonly get someone who's come back in, just bought a Dreamcast for the first time because they've spotted one with those sports games, and it's It was obviously a huge seller for, well, probably one of the biggest sellers. I don't think the Dreamcast sold huge, hence why it ended up like it did. But 2K2, Mike, back online, am I right? One of them is, isn't it? I bought one of them. I was going to play it with James, but I've never got around to it.
I know 2K1 was the first one that went online.
Right.
I know that it's regarded quite highly as well. I'm not sure whether it was 2K1 or 2K2 back online. I know one of them is, though, or at least it was coming back online.
So sorry that we potentially not done that the justice that some people would like, but we're going to move on. Similar sport, very different game. NFL Blitz. The game that a lot of people know because it has no art on the side, and we've mentioned that before. It's another Midway game, so they couldn't be bothered to port in VGA support because apparently they didn't have anyone at the company who knew how to do that. Made up for the fact, though, that I think this is brilliant, an insanely fun game to play, and again, it has the amazing announcer. Mike, I believe you voted for this. Have I got that right? Did you vote for this?
Yes, you did. I voted for NFL. I voted for 2001. I voted for the sequel.
Right. Which year was America only, wasn't it?
Yes, it was, yeah. The first one's great. It's great fun. Sort of the NBA Jam of American football, basically. It's that sort of style. The sequel is spot on. It's just, you know, there's a proper sort of season mode. The pitches, the different weather effects. Just a really, really good game. I do like those kind of Blitz games. I played on the 360 Blitz the League a couple of years ago. And I think just it's for those of us who aren't quite so stat heavy for American football. I think it's a much more what's the word I'm looking for? It's a much more
immediate,
easy way to get. Yeah, it's an immediate effect. It's a great arcade. Midway games of, you know, they've got a sort of, there's some great Midway games on the Dreamcast. You know, things like Hydro Thunder and stuff.
Yeah,
games that sort of get overlooked a little bit because they look a little bit cheap, I suppose, is the word I'd look for. They're not as polished as NFL 2K series.
I think that'd be a fair comment. Like I was mentioning with NBA Showtime, this also had the trivia quiz in it, I believe, and it also had the some stats and stuff up on the VMU. So again, whilst, like you said, Midway did sometimes lack a bit of polish, they did have those kinds of nice little touches and nice little features to them. I've never played the version you voted for. I do remember you telling me about the career mode before, but it's another game that I've never managed to find a working copy of or get a copy working, which is probably more testament to my poor burning skills. So maybe I should just buy a copy of that.
It's definitely worth it. I say it's... of all of the sports games on Dreamcast, including the ones we haven't mentioned yet, I think it's probably the most playable sports game on Dreamcast.
Yeah, definitely. I remember having a few friends who were like, would always be up for a game of that would never play any type of sports game, really. So a huge one there. Just a little shout out here. If anyone's a fan of that, you should check out, I always forget what it's actually called, whether it's Mutant Football League or Mutant League Football, which came out last year, which is on Xbox, PS4 and Switch now, and obviously PC, which is the spiritual successor to Mutant League Football on the Mega Drive and is very, very clearly influenced by Blitz to the extent that it's got the same guy doing the voiceovers. It's obviously got a very, very different universe feel to it in terms of it's based almost on the kind of Games Workshop style board game that's about American football and is insanely Blood Bowl, thank you, yes. It's a brilliant game. If you liked Blitz and you've maybe listened to this and you are one of the people who don't have a Dreamcast, because I do know we have some listeners like that, I would give that a shout. Happy to move on, Mike.
Oh yes.
Here we go. So number two, actually the sequel to the series, Tony Hawk 2 or Tony Hawk Pro Skater 2. I definitely voted for this. I'm just checking. Yes, you did as well, Mike.
Oh, I did. Without a doubt.
So the way we mentioned the way that we'd done the voting before, this game and the game that we're going to announce is number one, which some people maybe already guessed due to the fact we've not spoken about them yet.
NFL Quarterback Club.
Yeah, NFL Quarterback Club. We're clear winners. Tony Hawk's 2. I didn't play this during the contemporary time. I only got this recently, and I only played it for the first time last year, which is strange because Tony Hawk's Pro Skater 2, 3 even, is one of my favorite games of all time. And
yep, same.
To spend so long to get round to the second is frigging phenomenal. I'm probably stepping on your toes a bit here, but what is it that you like about this, Mike?
So it was one of the games I had when I first had Dreamcast. And I'd never played the game on the PS1, so I was sort of new to the series. I used to be heavily into the punk scene, skate punk scene. I used to write for fanzines and stuff. So the whole Tony Hawk 2, the culture, I think people underestimate how much it changed things, especially within that kind of community, where it's suddenly became mainstream. All the music we listen to, and the game the game is about skating, but the music is so intrinsic within the game, so important to the game. The game plays incredibly fluidly. The levels are incredibly intelligently designed. I think it was a high point for the series, and I love Tony Hawk series. Number 3, as you said, it was the reason I bought a PS2. It's an amazing game. Tony Hawk's Project 8 was the reason I bought a 360. American Wasteland was one of the greatest games I had on the original Xbox. But Tony Hawk's 2 for me is each level is just so perfect in its design. And it's just a fantastic game. And it started a huge craze. There were so many games like this on the Dreamcast. We had Dave Mirra, we had Matt Hoffman, we had MTV Sports Skateboarding. It was just defined an era for me. Late 90s. If anyone talks to me about late 90s anything, first thing that comes to my mind is Tony Hawk.
Absolutely love this. The first level in particular was perfectly designed. The way you start up on that ramp and you come down and you hit the jump over the kind of open half pipe is it Factory, I believe it's called? I utterly love this game. To the extent that I try to not look at anyone else's videos or anything about the game, because there's still a lot of secrets that I've never discovered. And I love recently on, I'm so bad with level names, but on Tony Hawk's 2, the first level where you're doing the competition, you do free 60.
Marseille, is it? Is it Marseille? Marseille,
yes, it is, yeah. And I hit I noticed there was a stick hanging against a tree and I knocked into it and it knocked down the secret area to the Marseille baths. So I've I remember I mentioned it to a friend who had the game originally, and he was just like, "Oh, I never found that." Like, it's just, again, it hints back to that kind of pre-internet era where you just look everything up or watch it on YouTube. But the idea that there's like those little bits, I remember when we were playing this on the Dreamcast group, some people weren't aware that you could open up the doors on the school on Schoolyard or whatever it's called by hitting grinding the certain rail. And it opens up the gymnasium, I think, isn't it? And you can go in and there's like the half pipe and the ramps and stuff. I just think the design on these, it's such a shame that they've got so lost from how great these Tony Hawk's 2 and Tony Hawk's 3 were. I know some of the American Wasteland games are liked, but they never really hit the heights, did they?
I think that's the thing for me is that the I love those games, but Tony Hawk's 3, I still would probably put Tony Hawk's 3 above Tony Hawk's 2.
I would.
To me, Tony Hawk
as well. Was
perfection.
Because go on.
No, I was just basically going to say that back in the day, I remember IGN and GameSpot. I believe both 2 and 3 both got perfect scores.
Right.
And there's not many games I agree with getting perfect scores, but I genuinely can't think of any reason why number 2 or number 3 has anything wrong with them. They're just perfect. It's quite incredible, really. 20 years old the game is now, and we're talking about it being perfection, but it really is.
And like, yeah, you mentioned the music. I was always more of a kind of indie and hip hop fan, but the fact that when the punk songs or the Scars tunes or whatever the genre you would be defined as would come on this. I got into them, or I'd like them, purely because of this game. I think they balanced the kind of blend and styles of music so well, to the extent that there are certain, so especially Tony Hawk's Free songs, if they come on, if I'm ever like a Spotify
Amoeba,
or YouTube.
Amoeba by Adolescence, probably the one number three. Go on.
I was just saying, like, whenever I hear those songs, I all instantly get like the image of like Foundry from Tony Hawk's Free or Factory or Story Art, and it's just like, yes, I need to play some Tony Hawk's when I get in. I need to grind that score well.
Yeah, and of course, right. from a British point of view, on Tony Hawk's 2, there's a band on there called Consumed, who are a skate punk band, but they're actually from Nottingham. They were quite big within the British punk scene back in the late 90s. Always quite odd for me to hear that they're on the game. I think they also had a track on Propeller Arena, which was
never caused a release, yeah. Although I did famously beat you at a game of Propeller Arena on a Dreamcast Divers unit. That's one of my defining memories of Play Blackpool.
Yes, you did, yeah. I'm not very good at that game.
Doesn't matter. I like to take every opportunity to mention it. I don't like to mention it to Quang, though, because I don't want him to know that we put a bootleg game in his driver's unit.
To be honest with you, Kev, you beat us on everything at Play. Me and Tom were pretty much beaten by everything we played you against, so...
Maybe I'll hold off on releasing that footage of me mistakenly playing what I thought was Sports Jam, but what turned out to be Sega Extreme Sports. Then I don't want to tarnish my reputation. Right, so we're kind of sidetracked away from the Tony Hawk's Halfpipe, and so we're going to move on to the definitive best sports game or sports game series, because I've put these together on the Sega Dreamcast, and it is, of course, not NFL Quarterback Club. It is the Virtual Tennis series. Mike, do you know anyone who doesn't like these?
No, I don't know. I've never found one yet.
These games, and the reason I went wrong at the start is because we've put these together as a series, and they're the clear winner. But had we not done them as a series, both Virtual Tennis and Virtual Tennis 2 would have been in the top 8. So there is a bit of a split in terms of some people prefer second one, some people prefer the first one. Mike, do you go for the first or the sequel, or do you just love them both? Or
I think in a very similar way to Tony Hawk's, I think Virtual Tennis 1 and 2 has done something which many games... very few games have ever done, which is they've hit perfection.
Yes.
Virtual Tennis 2 and Virtual Tennis 1 really are still the greatest tennis games ever made. And they don't need anything else. They've done everything right. I think Virtual Tennis 1 is a more pure experience, maybe, a bit of a more pure game. Virtual Tennis 2 is just icing on the cake, I suppose, with a much better career mode. Just a bit of a deeper game.
Yeah, which is echoes the thoughts that most of the listeners have, that a lot of people like the first one because it's got that kind of crazy arcade or just the arcade feel that a lot of people remember. And then the career mode, like the pirate ship stages and stuff like that, where you're leveling up your player and you've got the tour mode, a bit more in depth. I probably lean more towards number one. Do know that... there's one of the reasons why I like number one was highlighted. I'm just trying to find it on our Twitter feed here. Here it is. It's from Matt Lambo, who I believe is linked to the Maximum Power Up podcast, if I'm correct.
Yeah, he is, yeah.
So he says, Tommy Haas for life. So that's one of the reasons why I'm a big fan of the game, is because that kind of era of tennis. And the other tweet that I just wanted to read, which is at the top, we've got a few people who say this, but like they're not massive sports fans, but they're really big on this game. And here it is. Here it's Uncle Clutch, whose Twitter handle, apologies, I'm not going to attempt to read because I can't. But he's I don't particularly like sports games and know nothing of tennis, but Virtual Tennis is where it's at. You are right, Uncle Clutch. It is where it's at. So many people. This was one of those games that if you fired on, you could teach someone the controls in 15 seconds, and then they'd be knocking rallies back and forwards, and then you could try and get them used to like some of the more advanced techniques, or using the different characters, and like the Russian guy whose name I can never pronounce, Kolevnikov. How he's a speed merchant, or Haas, as we mentioned, or like Henman.
The Frankenstein monster of Tim Henman.
And then you've got the I can't remember. There was you unlock a character on here who is not a real tennis player. He's an Italian made up name. Someone who's got a Twitter account for this guy. I've completely blanked. I remember finding it, and they've got it's an active account pretending to be this made up virtual tennis player that has got like 60 followers. Like it's just the fact that the person is still sending the occasional tweet out for a bit, because most people would have no idea who that is. But yeah, a huge fan of this. I mentioned this before, that we played this a lot over when I was away over New Year's, not this one gone, but the one before. We played this every day for the week that we were there, just like constantly taking turns on it. Playing doubles is great. Playing singles is great. There's no greater feeling than when you get that max serve and it flashes red, and like you hit a serve that your opponent easily returns. Like it's no different to getting a serve that's halfway up, it feels like, but it just gives you that satisfaction that you've hit the timing perfectly. Brilliant sounds, brilliant music, baffling intro for the first game where it's talking about the pressure, and it's got that voiceover. Again, it seems a bit like it's come from a department that has never played or looked at any sports in real life. And they've got that, which person will be able to triumph even through the tension? It's got like a kind of broken delivery system in terms of the way the dialogue's produced. But absolutely phenomenal game. Did we have this on play at Play Blackpool? I don't remember playing it. But...
We didn't. I don't remember playing it, but we had it on one of the... I definitely put it on one of the consoles. Right.
Because I do remember a few people talking to me about this. It's like you said, it's one of the games where I've got Virtual Tennis 4, and I've got Virtual Tennis, was it 2009? Did they call number 3? I remember it didn't have the number in the title. And they're good, because they're Virtual Tennis, but they're not quite. Never got round to publishing it in the end, but I did write an article when I first got my arcade stick last year about great games to play with the Dreamcast arcade stick, and Virtual Tennis. Yeah. I think it's even better with that. And I did write in it. Maybe I will get around to publishing this, but it's just like, I used to love the arcade machine of this when I used to play it.
Yes.
Just having that kind of the clickiness of the stick and the chunkiness of the buttons, and the fact that it's only two buttons, three buttons. And it just feels perfect for that stick.
I think with Virtual Tennis, it's a real, to say how good the game is, I think in terms of tennis games, there was Pong and there was Virtual Tennis. And I think that they are the only two games that have really defined the entire sport as a video game. I think since Virtual Tennis, nothing, can beat. I don't think anything ever will beat it. Maybe if the Wii sort of motion control tennis game had been a bit more, better, it would have been sort of there. But tennis is just such a high bar. So what is basically Pong? Let's face it, the game is basically Pong. It's just you hit the ball across a net.
Yeah.
It's not exactly any more thing than that. They in Virtual Tennis 2, they added an extra button. Absolutely no need, because in Virtual Tennis 1, they nailed the controls already.
Yeah.
But every single release since of Virtual Tennis has done the same thing. They've added more things. They haven't needed to. Virtual Tennis 1 was pretty much perfection when it came out. I'm not actually a big tennis fan in terms of watching tennis, but I love tennis games. And Davis Cup Tennis on the Mega Drive is one of my all-time favorite games. I love Pete Sampras Tennis and things like that.
Yeah, Pete Sampras is a good one from the Drive.
And although they're great games, and Pete Sampras Tennis was a fantastic game, Davis Cup was a fantastic game, there's a couple of games on the spectrum which we get to tennis games. It's not an understatement to say that Virtual Tennis is just so far ahead of everything else. Even things like in number two, which you're playing and sort of the clouds go across the court. You've got the background, you're playing the World Tour, you're playing in Rio, and there's the Christ the Redeemer statue in the background. You've got sort of, when you switch perspective and to the other side of the net, and you're sort of playing in a slightly lower down view. So you're still playing a different perspective to get used to. So, but rather than playing just on one screen, the arcade games, some of them are just inspired. Say you've got their best sort of slightly crazy, wacky games to play.
Yeah.
And of course, we've mentioned that you can play this game sort of by using your fishing controller.
Allegedly, yes. I can't remember. Allegedly.
I think Tom tried it out. I don't think it was very successful.
I really like the fact that on the second, is the second one, they've got the the first one's got an element of this as well, but it's like the presentation style. Do you know when you win a point and it cuts to your player and he's like pumping his fist, or he's wiping his brow, or it's just that kind of, it's very similar to NFL 2K in that kind of television presentation style that for a lot of us is the way that we do know sport, because they've it's like recreated how you would see that, or like having the I think it's just called like London, isn't it, the Wimbledon. Yes, yeah. It's not got old court or something, but it's got the like the umpires are in the kind of classic white trouser chino as whatever it is that they wear when they umpire that event. So it's just
things like the French umpires speaking in French,
yeah, and the score is in French as well, yeah. Isn't it? So it's like just loads of little,
it's a tiny touch, but it's like, I think that's why we love the Dreamcast, that's why we love Sega for, is that they were able to do things like that, which just, little things,
especially for like what is like inherently an arcade game that doesn't necessarily need that, does it? So so there we are. So that is the definitive rundown. I'm just going to give you them one more time. So we've got Maximum Pull, which is not as good as Magic Pocket could potentially be if it was actually a snooker game, like I thought. Cosmic Smash, World Series Baseball at 9, NBA Showtime at 8, Virtua Athlete at 7, Sports Jam at 6.
Not extreme sports.
A game that will now forever haunt me. Virtual Striker at 5, NFL 2K Football Series at 4, NFL Blitz at 3, Tony Hawk 2 at 2, and then the definitive Dreamcast sports game is Virtual Tennis. So I'd just like to take this time to thank everyone who responded. Special shout out to PC Wizards, who came in with a slightly bizarre tweet of, does Boar Polo from Ooga Booga count? Sadly, Wizard, it does not. I've got Ooga Booga. I actually bought it off Tom, but I've not played it. I'm not aware of what the ball polo.
Ball polo is one of the events on Ooga Booga,
right?
Which obviously is one of the online playable games. It is, to be fair, it's up there.
So maybe I'll put that on my list of things to play along with Sports Jam. And just thanks to everyone else who got round to posting. Sorry if we've not managed to read out more of your tweets, but really appreciated your feedback on them. And hopefully you agree with us. If not, feel free to disagree via Twitter or via our Facebook group. The Twitter page is at the DC Junkyard. Mike on Twitter, you are?
I am space_turnip.
I have got that right. And then myself is at Dexter_Fletcher, if you would like to speak to me. Or you could reach me at Moneyball_Mace. And then our Facebook group, I always forget this. Is it Dreamcast Junkyard /groups? I should have put this on my notes.
Hang on, just let me get to Facebook. As you can see, I'm have no idea. It is just type in Dreamcast Junkyard on Facebook, you'll find this.
And you'll find it, and dreamcastjunkyard.co.uk is our obviously our blog site, so you can get in touch with us by any of those preferred means. We also have our YouTube channel, which is mainly staffed by James, but you can get in touch on there. Hopefully at some stage I will put up, even though it ended up not being used, I'm still going to put up my Sega Extreme Sports snowboarding fail, just as a humbling way of reminding me what an idiot I am. So thank you very much for joining us. Do you want to say goodbye, Mike?
Goodbye, Mike.
Goodbye. I've always confused how to end the show, and so I went with that, and it sounded like I was forcing you to say goodbye. So I apologize.
I told Tom we should start singing at the end of an episode once.
We need a theme tune. So
yeah, I think we should have a little jingle. I think Ross. My vote is for Ross to sing a song to play us out. If anyone wants to back me up on that, if you can just make sure you mention that in the group and on Twitter, say Ross to sing the song. And we'll get it done for you.
Right, there we are with that in mind. Thank you very much, and goodbye.